You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Okay, Mike, so we're going to go off book here a little bit. We're going to do something a little different. Screw the football. Let's talk about something that we actually enjoyed this week. And I'm talking about a show that you and I both love. Rick and Morty came back this week after a very lengthy hiatus. Then I'm sure you saw the April Fool's Day episode where Rick escaped from the Galactic Federation compound.
Yes, yes.
And now we got the new season upon us. So what'd you think of the show?
I haven't seen it yet because I don't have a lot of channels on cable. I cut her down a couple months ago. I have my sports package, and then I just have my basic CBC, CTV, all that stuff. So I didn't get a chance to see it yet, but I will be watching it on the internet as you did eventually.
Does that mean we have to talk about this game?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, I was ready. I had notes about this show, some of the references. Like, I was deep, ready to deep dive for an hour with you about Rick and Morty, but if you haven't watched it, I don't want to spoil anything because it was I'll say this. It wasn't my favorite episode. It was an okay one. There were some really good jokes, so I hope that you get a chance to watch it, and we'll talk about it at a later date. So I guess we got to talk about this nightmare of a game. I don't even know what to say about a game where the team you're going to talk about lost by 59 points. This has to be the worst game you've ever seen in this franchise's history, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, there's been some stinkers in the past. We've seen some terrible teams, but this one takes the cake, man. I mean, there was no redeeming qualities shown by this team in this game. It was terrible all around, offense, defense, special teams, you name it, they were bad.
We were trying to talk about what other terrible games have we seen recently? And we were only able to come up with two that I'm not sure top this one. There was the game in Austin's first season, the 37-0 shellacking that they took in Saskatchewan in 2013, and then there was the Labor Day rematch game they had against the Argos in 05 after they beat them on Labor Day 33-30. They then go into Toronto and get crushed 48-0. And those were really the only two games that popped into my head as games that could compete with this one. But even though the team didn't get shut out, like that 1 point they got, like that was – it's a joke. Like it's not even – It's almost like they did get shut out because the offense didn't do jack. The defense didn't stop anyone. Defense didn't create any turnovers, didn't really get any pressure on the quarterbacks. Like, it was just – having that 1 point there is almost like a taunt, as in, like, you're so bad that, yeah, okay, we didn't shut you out, but you got close enough to be able to get a punt into the end zone because it wasn't even a missed field goal. It was a punt that they probably didn't want to go in the end zone, so it was kind of a screw-up to begin with. And it's just, like, there's nothing to take from this game other than terribleness. We talked about it again. It's another thing we talked about before the show. It's like, is there anything positive to come out of this? And the answer is no. There's how can you look at this game and say anything nice about either of, like, the offense, the defense? Like you said, they all were terrible. Like, this is just going to be basically, it's Festivus. We're going to list our grievances here. Obviously they lost 60-1 and that's not going to be fun to watch, but I don't even know what to say. Like, I was bored.
No.
It was
they
awful.
Should, like, I can't believe I actually picked them to win this game on the podcast last week. It's pretty embarrassing, but there was just, I thought that they'd come out with a little fire under their ass, we're 0-4, we're coming in, we haven't beat Calgary since 1874, we're going to come in here and really give a good effort, and there was none whatsoever. The game started off not too bad, they were giving the ball to Gable looked good in that first drive, if you can call it a drive. I think they made it to the 55-yard line or something, and then they punted. And then after that, it was just way downhill, like just terrible. Claros actually almost threw a pick on that first drive too. And we've been, or at least I've been saying that the offensive line has been a big part of why Claros isn't playing well. But I don't know, man. This guy just isn't the same quarterback that we've seen in the past. He's just not as good, period.
No, you're completely right. He is the worst quarterback in the CFL right now. Like, numbers show it. I think the watching the games show it. This, we can blame every other factor we want on this, but some of the throws that he's making, he's not under pressure. He's the pick six he threw. He wasn't under pressure. He got the ball off. He threw it where he wanted to, and it was just a bad throw. And the receiver didn't make the right break, but the defensive back did. He took it to the house. Like, it at some point, and I think we've reached a point now, we have to stop giving him excuses because of how he was 2 years ago. He was awesome 2 years ago, but it's not 2 years ago anymore. And he's had a chance to break off that rust. And we can say, oh, maybe it's a scheme. He's with a new offensive coordinator. But he's with the same guy he was with last year. Like, everything about the breaks we gave Calero, saying, oh, he's coming off the injury, oh, those are gone. This is the quarterback he is right now. And out of the nine starters in the CFL, he is by far at ninth, and eighth, he can barely see.
Yeah. And that pick six, it seems like that route is being jumped a lot on him. I don't know if it's defenses are, you know, wise to Austin's offense or Potasic's offense or whoever's offense it is. I'm not even sure anymore. I would lean towards Austin. But yeah, Claros just isn't the same quarterback he was a couple years ago. And he just hasn't been the same since that injury. I don't know. He seems like a scared person playing football. He's scared in the pocket. He's running back, you know, 10, 15 yards, even when there's no pressure, it seems. It's, I don't know. He's not a good quarterback right now. He like you said, he's the worst quarterback in the CFL right now.
Yeah, and at the beginning of the year, people were picking in to be MOP. And at this rate, he'll be lucky to finish the season as a starter. And I'm not saying they should bench him. And Ken Austin came out after the game and said he's starting against Edmonton. But at what point do you pull the plug and say, we need a spark, and let's get Jeremiah Mazzoli in there? And when Mazzoli came in this game, he came in the fourth quarter, and he's put together some nice plays. He had a few nice runs. I was worried that, okay, here we go. We're going to have those idiot fans who I had to deal with a lot on Saturday night saying, oh, yeah, time to pull the plug. And, well, look at Mazzoli's numbers. They're worse than Caleros's. Yeah, he had 77 yards in one quarter of play, but he was under 50%. He threw a pick himself. Everyone's looking at it because he can run the ball, but I don't want my quarterback running the ball. Maybe when it's necessary, but I don't care that Jeremiah Mazzoli has 43 yards rushing. Like, that's great, but that's not what he's paid to do. And yeah, maybe at some point down the line we're going to see a quarterback change. I don't think it's time to see it now. I think Caleros has done enough in his career to earn the right to keep playing, even if he's playing poorly, because you know that he can get it right. I don't know. I just know that at some point really soon, and maybe depending on what happens in this game coming up against Edmonton, I think really soon we're going to start hearing about a quarterback controversy in Hamilton, and there are going to be a lot of fans clamoring for Mazzoli to start.
Yeah, there already are. I mean, now, Austin's been getting a lot of the heat, you know, fire Austin, but what about Eric Tillman? What about the GM? I know that Ken Austin is the VP of football operation. He's the boss of Eric Tillman, but Tillman's supposed to be the guy building this team. You know, he's the guy that signs the players. And I'm seeing just not good talent on the field. There's not a lot of depth. When people, you know, you can use the excuse about injuries like we have been doing on this show in the secondary and all that stuff. But at some point, you look at teams like Edmonton, who have an extensive list of injuries and are sitting at 5-0. This team has no depth whatsoever on the offensive line, in the secondary, in the receiving core. It is terrible. And that lies on the GM, as far as I'm concerned. It's not Ken Austin, the coach, which, don't get me wrong, the coaching has been terrible as well. The whole friggin' team has been terrible. The players, the coaches, the front office, whatever. But no one's talking about Tillman, and I think that he has to get a lot of the blame right now. Do you think so or not?
I think he shares in the blame for sure. Like, yeah. I don't even think it's the depth is an issue. I think we overvalued some of these players. I think we saw a guy like Brian Timms come in late last year with no pressure on him whatsoever, playing that game against Montreal, look great. And we thought, okay, this is the next guy, and now he gets a starting role, and he's a starter coming out of training camp, and he's been invisible. He hasn't made one big play for this team all year. He had zero catches in this game. Zero catches. And this team was throwing the ball a lot when they got down by as much as they did. He had no catches. The one that stands out to me is they had it, I think it was like 2nd and 2, and they ran that play that I love where the receiver cuts across the offensive line and squirts out the back, and he's always open, and Caleros threw one up. It wasn't a great throw. Don't get me wrong. I'm not putting all the blame on Timms. There wasn't a great throw, but it hit Timms in the hands, and if it hits you in the hands as a receiver, you're supposed to catch it. Hit him in the hands, he dropped it, they punt, and that was it. If he picks up that first down, again, I'm not saying the Ticats were going to win this football game, but he picks up that first down, who knows? Oh, that's the big play that just kind of sparks the team, and maybe they get a little something going. But no, they punt, and I think Calgary got the ball and went down and scored a field goal. It may have even been the punt that ended up going back to the house. I don't remember, because I'm trying to not remember most of this game because it was that bad. But crap like that, it's these simple plays that you see, watch other teams run and go, my God, that works every single time. And then you watch the Ticats run it, and it's an incompletion, or it's picked off, or it's batted down at the line of scrimmage. It just seems like everything that every other team can do well, this team can't do, and this team does nothing they do well, and this is how we get to 60-1.
Yeah, and I'm just really worried about the talent evaluators on this team, because it's not there. I mean, the last 2 years, every single week it seems they're changing the defensive backfield. So shouldn't we have the players that we want as starters when we come into the season? Why are we changing? Why are we signing new DBs every week? Why are we changing the secondary every single week? I mean, it's really frustrating. How is a team supposed to gel when there's changes every single game? What did we do in the offseason? We signed Kane. What else did we do?
Brought back Emmanuel Davis, who hasn't played a game this year.
Yeah.
That's about it.
We signed Xavier Fulton. I mean, it seemed like, and we released a whole bunch of guys. I know that. Over the last 2 or 3 years, we released a lot of players that at the time, I didn't think a big deal of it, but you look around the league and it's scattered with former Ticat players that are performing well as starters. One example is Figueroa here in Edmonton. He's the starting left tackle and he's been doing a pretty good job from what I can tell. Now, I know that he had a lot of injury troubles, but who hasn't on the Ticats? I mean, seems like every single player has had injury troubles over the last couple of years. And I just don't understand why these players are so terrible at Hamilton, and then they're released and they're starters and perform well on other teams.
Well, that's just it too. The guys that they let go this year, Rico Murray, Johnny Sears, it was, okay, we're getting rid of the guys that are always hurt. We're going to bring in guys that are healthy. And we haven't seen Emmanuel Davis play. We saw Abdul Kane play for a half and get hurt again. You want to laugh and joke and say, oh, it's just bad luck. But at some point you got to look at it and go, there's a reason that this team can't stay healthy. Is it the medical staff? Is it something you're doing in training? Is it? But you're right. Injuries are an excuse, and they're not a viable one. When you see teams like you mentioned Edmonton or Calgary, who like, let's not forget, yeah, Calgary's up 39-1, and they benched Bo Levi Mitchell, and then Andrew Buckley came in and went 10 for 10 for 106 yards and touchdown. He looked like Dave Dickinson. Like he made him look like a superstar.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I hope he is a good like, I've never really seen him play, except for in preseason. And I am impressed with how he throws the ball. But this kid's like, he's not – he shouldn't look like Joe Montana out there, Josh. That's what I'm trying to say here. You know, it's really it's laughable. It's honestly laughable. This team is god-awful.
the thing that bothers, I think, and I think you kind of touched on it. You look at this team, what players have they developed themselves? I'm looking at some of the guys here on offense and defense, and Mike Jones has had a pretty decent second season. He's a guy that they brought in themselves. Luke Tasker obviously is a guy who's only ever played in Hamilton, but Brian Timms hasn't played well. And then you have Kevin Elliott, who was a guy that they didn't bring into the league. CJ Gable bounces out of the lineup. Zach Caleros, Jeremiah Mazzoli, neither of those guys started with the Ticats. They were brought in by someone else. And then you bring up the secondary. Look at all the guys back there. Maybe you can look at a guy like Richard Leonard, who I think has performed pretty well as a rookie in this league. But they had some other rookies playing in this game. They had Cavell Connor come in because Simone Lawrence didn't play. I didn't see much from him other than getting a stupid penalty. Justin Rogers, who has like 40 games of NFL experience, has been awful. I don't even know why he's on the field, to be perfectly honest with you.
But that one play in the end zone, it should have been an interception, and the guy totally goofs it.
Like, how do you do that? It's in your hands. It's in your hands.
Yeah. At least, knock it down or something. Do something. And then, I mean, the game was over already at that point, but that was just a kick right in the butt.
Yeah.
I mean, right before halftime, terrible.
Show a little fire in your belly. You know what I mean? Like, this team has not brought in any, maybe with the exception of Luke Tasker, hasn't brought in a guy that I would say is an impact player that didn't play for another team. There's guys that have played well. But look at the secondary. Yeah, okay, Emmanuel Davis. Emmanuel Davis would count, but Emmanuel Davis isn't freaking playing. And it's like it's so frustrating.
I don't even know what's wrong with him. What's wrong with
him? You might as well ask the wall, because you're gonna get the same answer you get from the team, because no one seems to know.
Yeah, Austin over the years has said next man up. It doesn't matter. We have players that will step up and we expect them to perform the way the starters do. Well, the next man up isn't good enough. And that, to me, is a question of talent evaluation and no depth. No depth at all. I mean, if the stars get injured and the guys that are behind them come in and they suck, we don't have any depth.
I can't add anything to that. You're completely right. You're completely right.
It's terrible. This team is really bad. And it sucks because they used to have players that were good, and it seems like they gave up on them or something. I mean, the prime example for me is, Tasker was, they gave up on Ellingson because of Tasker. Well, honestly, if I'm given a choice right now between Luke Tasker and Ellingson, I'm going Ellingson 100%. Are you?
There's another great example of a guy who couldn't stay healthy when he's here, but he goes to Ottawa. He hasn't missed a game.
Yeah.
Again.
And this guy's clutch.
And I believe he's the leading receiver in the league. Now, in fairness, he has played one more game than everybody else. But still, regardless, you look at the numbers, he's the top receiver in the league. And he's doing it in a receiving corps now where he's the focal point. He wasn't. They had Chris Williams. They had Ernest Jackson. Now he's the guy there, and he's still putting up numbers. And you're right. No, you're totally right. If right now, if Ottawa came – if I'm the GM of the Hamilton Tiger Cats and Ottawa came to me and said, we will trade you Greg Ellingson for Luke Tasker straight up, I'd take that deal without even thinking twice. And I like Luke Tasker. But
so do I.
Ellingson
he's one of my favorite.
But Ellingson's better. Ellingson is better right now and has been pretty much since he left Hamilton.
Yeah, and, Tasker is one of my favorite Tiger Cats on this. I'm super high on Tasker. I love Tasker. He's great. But you look at the big playability of Ellingson. You look at the way he just catches everything, well, not everything, but pretty much everything that's thrown his way. You know, tough, tough catches. He makes that play. And that's a guy we just let slip through our fingers. And there's many, many other players that have slipped through the Ticats' fingers that are capable starters in this league at the very least.
Yeah, and to me, it's not just about, like, their replacements playing well. Like, I look at a guy like Brian Hall, who I thought was a linchpin of that defense, and they let him walk, and he bounced around from Toronto and didn't have a great year last year. Now he's in Calgary. And, yeah, they've got some good – they had Drake Nevis last year who played well enough that he got a big contract from Winnipeg. You got Davin Coleman who's played well for the team this year. But there's something to me about – even if he's a veteran player who you've been able to replace – that there's having a guy who's been there before. And Brian Hall, to me, is still a great player, should still be on this team. But they made the decision to go away from him. And it's that veteran voice, that voice in the locker room that says, I've done it before. He was on the two Grey Cup teams. Like, there's something about having that. Like, how many guys are on this team are remaining from even the last time they went to the Grey Cup? Like, it's Caleros, it's Banks, Gable. Like, there's not a lot of guys here that remember what it was like when this team was winning football games. And to have a guy like that, just even if you go into a game like this and get your asses kicked, you could still have a guy in the locker room, and not a guy who's necessarily always vocal, but someone who'd be in there goes, guys, don't worry about it. We got this. I've been here before. A steady, calming influence. I see a lot of guys who are rah-rah. Simone Lawrence, love Simone Lawrence, but he's a rah-rah guy. And you don't really have that quiet. And Brian Hall wasn't quiet. Yeah. He was very much a personality. But you know what I mean? That like just kind of that steady player who he was there. He was a rock. He didn't put up a ton of numbers, but he was a guy that you could rely on to be there week in, week out. And, yeah, maybe they've replaced him with some younger guys. But at what expense?
At the expense of being a terrible team. The only guy I could think of that would be that, you know, quiet lead by example guy would be John Chick. But that's the only guy I can really think of right now. Like, who is the leader of this defense? I'd have to say Lawrence, but you're right. He's a rah-rah guy, a smack-talk guy. He's not that quiet lead-by-example leader.
Well, the thing that I look at now, and yeah, we can talk about there's a lack of talent on this team, and I agree with you, but the talent that they do have on this team, contracts are going to start to expire, and if this team goes 4-14, is a guy like, say, Craig Butler going to want to come back even though he hasn't played? But, like, you know what I mean? Like, our guys, like, is Ted Laurent, whose contract is up at the end of the year, is he gonna decide, you know what, I'm going to move on somewhere else to try to get that ring? Because I don't think he's won a Grey Cup. Like, where is this team going to lose even more talent in the offseason and be even worse going into next year? And it, like you said, the talent evaluation of this team have been bad as it is, and that's starting with a deck that was like they had a pretty good team when this whole thing got taken over in 2013, and now you look at it and you just kind of just shake your head and worry about the next couple of years. Like, this could be the start of a really bad run for this team.
That's what I was thinking that earlier today, that you know, we could be looking at a pretty serious rebuild and some pretty serious misery for the next couple years if this season really continues the way it's going right now. And I just don't want to see that. I always said, you know, cherish the moments when we had this team that was actually decent. You know, not great, because they were floating in mediocrity if you go by their regular season records, 9-9, 10-8, whatever. But cherish those moments, because remember, we are fans of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, historically, for at least most of my lifetime, terrible, terrible team.
Yeah, pretty much mine too. It's fine. I was actually watching the 99 East final this weekend, and it brought me back to those glorious 2 years in 98 and 99 when they go to back-to-back cups and they win the cup in 99. But it was funny watching it and just seeing all the – and not just on the Tiger Cats, but on the Owls too, just seeing all the talent that was on that team. And now you look at a team like this and go, where is it? They had Danny McManus. They had Darren Flutie. They had Joe Montford. They had Gerald Vaughn. They had Rob Hitchcock. Like, Dave Hack. Like, they had Carl Coulter. Like, that was a team that had some players. And you looked at every level of that squad and you went, they got someone who can play. Lamar McGriggs, if you remember him. Like, that was a talented football team. You look at this team and you go, all right, they got a guy here. They got a guy there. But it's just not there. It's actually funny. You have the same copy of the game that I have, obviously, because we got them together. Ron Lancaster comes out at the end of halftime, and they say, I believe the score was 15-10 at half. And I believe it was Steve Armitage, just when the games were on CBC, and he says to Ron Lancaster, like, okay, so what do you need to do in the second half? And his thing was, we need to stop shooting ourselves in the foot. They're not beating us. We're beating us. And it's just that sort of attitude from a guy who – had done it all before, won multiple Grey Cups, been to multiple Grey Cups, did it as a player, and did it. That I feel like that attitude is missing. Danny McManus, actually, if you watch the game, had a horrible game. I think he threw three interceptions, didn't throw a touchdown, but when it came down to it, you knew he was, like, obviously, with it being 18 years since, you knew he was going to make a play, but you knew he was going to make a play to win that game because that's just the player that he was. You don't see players like that on this team right now, and And that to me is the scary part, because they did not play really well in that football game. Like I said, Danny McManus had three picks. He didn't throw for a ton of yards. It was a bad game from the quarterback position. You see that in this game. We see one interception from the quarterback, and we're all thinking, well, the game's over. You didn't see that then. He went out there. They even showed his stats from the previous week when he played against the Argos. He was like 9 of 24, less than 100 yards passing, threw two picks. Like, he did not play well until the Grey Cup. And I can't wait to dig into the Grey Cup, because maybe my memory is serving me incorrectly, and he didn't play that well in the Grey Cup either. But he had two terrible, terrible football games in the playoffs, and the Cats won them both. If Zach Caleros comes out and has a terrible game, the Cats are doomed. There's no player on the team in 2017 that maybe it's not even a player. It doesn't seem like they don't. And this actually, we can probably stretch this into last year as well. They just don't have that attitude that if things go poorly, don't worry about it. We can dig out of it. They had that a couple of years ago, and it felt like they had that at the beginning of last season. The 25-point comeback win against Edmonton is a prime example. They never gave up. They just kept plugging along, and they got the win. And then from that point forward, it just feels like this team lost something. That's that little something that you can't – that intangible, if you will, that you just can't measure. They just don't have it in. When things go bad, the whole thing collapses. We talked about it last week, Mike, when I said – when they kicked that field goal and they're up by five, and I'm sitting in the stands saying, well, the Eskers are going to drive and win this game. If they don't find a way to put away their opponents, they're just going to lose a bunch of football games. And now we've got this debacle on our hands where they lose 60-1. I guess the only light I can see at the end of the tunnel here is we've hit rock bottom, right? Like, it can't get worse. They're not going to go into Edmonton this week and lose 65-1, are they? Please tell me they're not.
I certainly hope not. I agree. I think this team has hit rock bottom, but I don't know if it's going to get much better. I mean, can we talk about Jeff Reinbold's defense for a second?
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's been just terrible. I mean, they must be giving up 40 points a game, and we know that it's not just him. Obviously, it's a mixture of his defense and the players on the field. But I don't know if it's the defense has changed that much from Milano Steinhardt. I remember Ken Austin saying something that the schemes won't change at all, really, when Reinbold took over this year. So, you know, and you saw it a little bit last year when Steinhardt was here, that I think the offenses in the CFL were figuring out this defense. And if they are the same, then they sure have figured it out, because it's just horrendous.
You're right, sir. They're giving up 40.2 points per game. Now, obviously, giving up 60 in a game is going to skew that. But still, even if you take that out, they're giving up a ridiculous amount of points per game. Before the season started, I wrote for 3Down about, here's what you can expect to see from this defense based on what he did in Montreal. And everything's coming true. They do fairly well against the run, although saying that after Jerome Messam gashes them this week is probably chuckle-worthy. But they give up a lot of yards through the air. They give up a lot of points. And that's what Reinbold's defense did in Montreal, and that's what the defense is doing here. And we can mention the players, we can mention the schemes, but it's a combination of everything. There's just, and I go back, there's just this intangible that they're going to go out there and make a play that is missing. It was there a couple of years ago. It's gone now. And I don't know if it can come back with this group. I think we may have seen the run of this group. And I'm mostly thinking of the players, not necessarily the coaches in front office, but I think that this group has kind of met its sort of end. And I'm not calling for changes. I'm not calling for firings or benchings or anything like that. Play out the season. Let's see how it goes. But the idea that this team could turn it around and, oh, they're only 2 points out of a playoff or 4 points out of a playoff spot, like, that's all true, but it's all meaningless. You know what I mean? Because a team doesn't get beat 60-1, and then you come on here and talk about how they can still make the playoffs. I don't care if it's five games in. This team is bad right now. Very, very bad.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about the defense, but, I mean,
The offense scored 91 points. That, and you know what? It's incorrect. The offense has not scored 91 points. The team has scored 91 points. They had a blocked punt for a touchdown. Like, this offense is not – like, there's nothing on this team that you can look at and go – okay, I can hang my hat on that. The closest we have to someone, and this is stretching it, especially after this game, is Castillo. He's the only thing, but when your kicker is your best player, you've got a lot of problems.
Yeah, I mean, the defense is on the field pretty much the whole game, it seems. I know that it's not – that's not true, but the offense is just terrible. They're two and outs, and it just looks so bad, man. And you talk about the 99 teams in the playoffs when Danny Mac, you know, he played like in the playoffs. Obviously, in those first two games, those were not good games, but at least they had a Ronald Williams that could run the ball, and they had a running game to at least lean on that. And we don't have that. We've seen a little bit of it in the last couple of games. I guess Austin is finally giving in and trying to run it a bit, but not really, though. I mean, last game, the first drive, and then after that, it was pretty much all pass. So basically, this team, offense, defense, special teams, is just terrible. And it's very frustrating to watch because there's no hope. I mean, when I'm watching that game, I don't think the offense is going to storm down the field and score a touchdown. I think they're going to go two and out, and then the defense is going to give up a touchdown. So it's tough to watch when there's no hope.
Yeah, I've said about all I want to say about this game. You normally, when you play a player of the game, we're not doing that this week. You don't name anyone player of the game after you get beat by 59 points. So just like we said earlier in the year, if there's no one ready for the bozo, we're not going to hand it out. We're not handing a player of the game this week. This was terrible. And hopefully it's, like I said, hopefully this is rock bottom, because I don't want to see what it's like if this gets any worse. And I will say this, if they come out with a terrible performance against the Edmonton Eskimos, that sellout streak that Tim Hortons Field has ends against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers on August 12th. There's no way. I would be shocked if they got 20,000 people out to a game if this team's 0-6 and just came off two absolute poundings in Alberta.
Yeah, I would be shocked as well. I'm not ready to give up on the season yet. I don't want to. But, you know, logic-wise, you probably should. But I guess the season really starts at Labor Day. But if you lose nine games, if you go 0-9, then you should dig yourself a pretty big hole.
Obviously, you say that very sarcastically, because I'm sick of that saying, that old-time fans say the season starts on Labor Day. Like, is that because we didn't really get games on TV before Labor Day and no one saw what was going on? Because to me, I don't care when you win. Win every game. Win when they play the game. This idea that the season doesn't start till Labor Day. Well, if that was true, then when the Saskatchewan Roughriders were 0-9 a couple years ago, well, they still had a chance. They didn't. They were done. If the Ticats go into Labor Day or come out of Labor Day 0-9, they're done. Like, I don't care about this axiom that CFL fans have that the season doesn't start until... No, the season starts in June. That's when the season starts. The real season starts in June. The preseason's over. Like, I'm so sick of that saying because it's not at all true. I don't care. Yeah, we've seen teams start poorly and storm back. We've seen this team a couple years ago did it. They started 1-6, and we're going to get into a question about the 2014 team a little bit later. But we saw this team start 1-6, I'm just sick of hearing that saying, because that's the idea that you're giving these guys a break. You're giving the players and the team, oh, don't worry, you'll find yourself. And then you get to October, and the team's like, oh man, they're 2-13. I guess the season is over. It's like, no, it was over in friggin' July, when the team was 0-5 and getting beaten by 59 points. Like, give your head a shake.
I've never really bought into that saying. I would say that the season maybe heats up after Labor Day. Maybe interest is at an all-time high after Labor Day. You know, the attendance rises, the team numbers rise. But, you know, the nine games before the Labor Day Classics are just as important.
They count.
They count, yeah. So,
they don't wipe the slate.
I agree. I don't like that thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy. Okay.
I don't like that saying either.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk for some news. Ticats made a slew of roster moves over the last week. First off, they brought back Dominique Ellis, which was a bit of a surprise to me. And they brought in a couple of guys they had in their neg list in offensive lineman Riker Matthews and linebacker Curtis Newton. And then in a separate transaction today, which is Monday, they signed former Montreal Alouettes defensive back Don Unamba, and they also released a few players. They released defensive back Tristan Dauphlin and offensive lineman Matthew Dupuis. And then today, when they signed Unamba, they also let Jacob Scarfone, the wide receiver they drafted out of Guelph, go, and he is going to go head back to Guelph for the college season this year. So few moves. The big one's obviously the signing of Ellis. What did you think about that when you saw it?
I thought it was an interesting move. You know, he's had some success over the over
I'm
the
sorry,
years.
I'm sorry. Hold on. You had some what? You had some what?
He had some success over his time in the CFL. You know, not a crazy, you know, superstar player or anything, but he's an experienced guy. But I don't know if it matters. I mean, they're just gonna keep. We're gonna keep hearing these DBs sign week after week after week, and they'll keep shuffling, and then they'll have no continuity on this team. And I'm just sick of that. I don't. They should have done better preparing this team or building this team in the offseason instead of signing players at random, trying to find a quick fix, which is not going to happen.
No, quick fix is absolutely not going to happen. And it makes me wonder what they saw in him. Obviously, I think that this move was precipitated by the injury to Keon Lynn against Edmonton. Another move the team made is they placed him on the 6-game injured list. He does have a broken leg. Apparently, that's a 9 to 12 month recovery process, so we're not going to see him until at least next year. So obviously, that's why they bring in Ellis. I guess they cut Lynn or they cut Ellis, and I guess that was the move that they made. And again, is it going to matter? I don't think so. Like this, we can sit here and say, well, wait until this guy gets back. None of it matters.
Wait till Kane gets back, and then he gets injured like halfway through the game, and probably be out for another 6 games. It's like, oh my god, yeah. The luck on this team is brutal. And but once again, you can't use injuries as an excuse because Edmonton's doing it. Calgary did it a couple years ago with their offensive line. They were pulling people off the street, and they were, you know, being a dominant team. So, you know, like once again, the depth is not there.
Yeah, for sure. The other moves that I mentioned, they're depth signings, I guess. I know that's probably going to make you steam come out of your ears, but I guess that's what they are. They're trying to plug these holes. They're trying to find anything that fits, and maybe one of these guys steps up, gets a chance, and shows, oh, this is the guy. Who knows? I'm not going to hold my breath, but you're right. And a couple more DBs signed. It's the same revolving door we've seen with this team the last few years, and it has produced fewer and fewer wins every time they do it. And we are on a course right now to get the fewest wins of the Ken Austin era, and a playoff spot is highly unlikely at this point. So I guess do what the Riders did last year with Chris Jones. Use it as an extended training camp and see what you got. And now you look at Saskatchewan, and they don't look so bad in Jones's second year. But this is Austin's fifth, and these things should be solidified by now. So for them to be rotating guys in is very, very disappointing.
Yeah, it really is. I think our chance at a championship was against the Calgary Stampeders in Vancouver. That's when this team peaked. And, I mean, we had that good season, half a season the year after, but it's been downhill since that team was together, I think.
Yeah, I was going to disagree with that. I was going to say 2015. If Zach Claro stayed healthy that year, the drought's broken, and that team was going to win 13, 14 games. They were rolling, but you know what? That's sports though, man. We can't go back in time and say they could have done this. It didn't happen. And you're right. The chance they had was against the Stamps, and it didn't happen. And look, those 2 years are still going to be fondly remembered, but they seem like a very long time ago now that we're sitting here looking at this team now.
They really do. They really do.
All right. So CFL news, there's not really anything, but I did want to get your opinion on one thing. You named Daron Carter as one of your co-bozos last week, rightfully so, for the altercation he had with Josh Bell in the Stamps-Riders game a week ago. Carter was fined for his role in that incident, but Bell was not. Now, there's been a lot of consternation, especially from people out in Saskatchewan, that Bell shoved Carter and should have been fined as well. Where do you stand on this?
You know, it does take two to tango, and he did, you know, it was physical contact before the game. Daron Carter, you know, egged it on. But I think that he should have been fined as well. He, you know, he laid his hands on him and he gave him shoves. So I think it's only fair that he should have been fined.
I disagree. And here's why. I think because Carter came onto his, and I'm, if he would have been fined, I wouldn't have been surprised. But I think he comes across the field. He's in an area where he shouldn't be. I think he get one shot. It's not like he dragged him down and started wailing on him. He gave him a shove to get him back across the line. It was a very forceful shove. But I think you kind of deserve that. If a guy walks into your house and sits on your couch, you're not going to very politely remove him. You're going to forcefully remove him from your area. And Daron Carter went and tried to sit on Josh Bell's couch. And I think one shot, you get one free shot. I think that's fair. I think if we would have gone over that, I think we would have had a problem, and a fine would definitely have been warranted. But I think one shot, I think that's fair.
I understand the, you know, defending your turf aspect of it, but I don't know. I'm going to have to disagree with you. I think you should have got something for just being a part of it.
Yeah, I'm actually really surprised he didn't get fined. Honestly, I thought that would have been easy to fine both guys. I was really shocked when I saw the list of fines to come out or punishments that came out last week, and his name wasn't on. I was really surprised. But then maybe, you know, the commissioner's thinking the same thing. Like, hey, you walk into his house, you get one shot. Yeah, but who knows? Speaking of the commissioner, I don't want to get too far off. I don't want to go too far off on a tangent to extend the show even longer than it is. But you got to like everything he's done, right? Like, he's – every time he comes out and speaks or says – I think he's been at, like, every stadium already. He's been on the job for, like, 3 weeks. And I think he's been to every single stadium to watch every team play. Every time I see this guy, I'm more and more impressed, right? Like, he's killing it right now, no?
Yeah, he's everywhere. I mean, I think he's been to 2 S games, but I'm not positive on that. But, yeah, it seems like every time I tune into a game, he's there. And, you know, the guy, you can tell he just has a passion for this league. The news that a decision might be coming out about rule changes maybe this week. And, you know, the guy just gets it. He gets this league. He understands the fans. He understands the players. He understands everything about it. So, yeah, I've been over the moon impressed with Ambrosi so far.
Yeah, the league nailed this hire. And if they give him a mandate and allow him to be the leader, I think he could take this league to some new heights. Anyway, moving on. Bozo of the week time, Mike. This one seems pretty obvious.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch the entirety of the Toronto-Saskatchewan game, but that Johnny Sears play was interesting, to say the least. I mean, that was an opportunity for the Argos to get the Riders off the field, down by 3 in the fourth. You know, they punted to the Argos, that they could march down the field. Ricky Ray's playing pretty good. SJ Green catches. They could at least tied the game, but Johnny Sears Jr. has a mental breakdown, a brain fart, and doesn't touch the player when he's on the ground, and then he allows him to get up and doesn't make the tackle. Real bozo move by Johnny Sears Jr. You know, I don't want to say they cost them the Argos the game, but he did damage to their chance of coming back in that game for sure.
Oh, this was when I saw it, I was thinking, what is he doing?
I know.
Because I was watching it live, and I'm going, what is he doing? And then it was Bakari Grant who caught the pass. He gets up, and he still has a chance to wrap him up, and then he goes for the strip, and he misses it, and Grant breaks free and picks up, like, 40 yards. It's like, why touch him down, get the punt, let your offense go score? Like, that's what it's for. And it's just the Riders basically run out the clock. I think they score a touchdown on that drive anyway, pretty much seal the deal, and it's like, man, oh man, like if there's a bozo behavior, that's the epitome of bozo behavior, because you're out there thinking too much. Just make the play, get off the field, let your offense go do their thing, and good things could have happened. Instead,
all you gotta do is touch him. All you gotta do is touch him, Josh.
That's it. And it looks, you know, like he went to touch him and then, like, pulled back. It was so weird.
It was very strange. It's like, did he have a bet on the Riders that game? No, I'm just joking, but that is one of the strangest things I've ever seen. Like, a person who's been playing football, I am sure, his whole life, doesn't make that simple play. It's mind-boggling, man. It's just a head-scratcher.
For sure, for sure. Okay, we got to preview this upcoming game, sadly. Look, it's the winless Ticats facing the undefeated Eskimos, and to sit here and try to tell you why we think or what we think the team can do to win this game, I think would be silly. I think, yeah. Especially after we're coming in, after watching the 60-1 beating they took last week, But if you're looking for a glimmer of hope, if you're a Ticat fan out there listening to this and you're looking for any sort of silver lining, there is this. The Ticats under Kent Austin are 3-1 in Edmonton. They've won the last two in Edmonton. And, of course, we all remember, and you remember, I think, very vividly, the near 50-point win when they won, I think it was 49-20 a couple years ago, which I believe you called. It's one of the few things I remember about years ago on the show. Your bold prediction for that game was the Ticats would score 50, and they nearly did. And I believe that was the first game you ever went to, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was.
So you were in attendance for that one. Then you were in attendance last year when Jeremiah Mazzoli completes, 25 straight passes or something like that to break the record, and the Ticats make the big comeback, win that one 37-31, stun the Eskimos there. So, again, I'm not going to sit here and say the Ticats are going to win this football game. I'm not going to bother telling you what they should do on offense or what they should do on defense to win this game. I'm just going to say there's a possibility they could win this, and if they do, I'll be as shocked as everyone else. I think this is one of those things where the most diehard of Ticat fans are going into this going, hey, I hope they can win. But they stayed out in Alberta. Maybe that's something to get away from all the distractions here at home. I don't know. You said earlier you don't want to give up on the season. I don't either. And it'll be funny if they find a way to beat the Eskimos. We'll be back here next week talking about, well, now they just sit, 2 points out of a playoff spot and things are looking up.
They're upcoming, the upcoming schedule is
it's not that bad.
I can see it now.
So can I. We're such fools. We're so behooven to week swings in our emotions. But I don't want to break this game down any further than we have to. They're in tough. The Eskimos have looked really good. I thought they played their best game. The Eskimos did against BC. I think that was the most complete performance that the Eskimos have put together. I think they've used a lot of late game heroics to win games up until that point. That was the one that it looked like they were clearly the better team on the field against the Lions. And Lions are a good football team. And Travis Lule's been playing excellent. So that was a good win for them. And I think the Ticats are in tough. There's no doubt about it. The Ticats are in tough. But you know what? There's a reason they play these games. And teams go and get smoked and then come back the next week and win. It can happen.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. Maybe I'll bring some good luck to the team watching the game live. But they just have to play like a professional football team. You know, that would be nice to see. But, yeah, I'm not going to get into what they need to do and all that stuff because just win a game, please. I mean, this is getting down to crunch time here. Let's get a win and go from there. But like you said, it will not be easy.
They can win 1-0 for all I care. A win is a win to me. I don't care how they get it.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I'm in total agreement. Just get it done. You know, I'm hoping that there's a fire lit under their ass when they come out here, and I'm hoping that they were thoroughly embarrassed by that performance last week and they come out and play a hell of a football game. But I have my doubts.
Well, a little birdie told me that there could be some Hamilton spies at Eskimo practice this week. So maybe if one of those spies can relay some information to the team, maybe it won't be so bad.
Yeah, maybe we'll see. I got my binoculars out, and maybe I will go to one of the practices. I just don't want to get like banned from the stadium or something. That would be terrible.
I can't imagine they'd ban you from the stadium. For those who don't know, Mike posted on Twitter that he was going to go to an Eskimos practice this week in his Ticat gear and see if it caused a bit of a ruckus. And I think it's hilarious. I think you should at least try. I can't. Here's the thing: you'd have to be really stupid as a spy to go dressed in the team regalia of the team you're spying. Like if the Ticats did have spies or any team had spies, like how stupid would it be if you're having practice and all of a sudden you look up and you go, there's a guy up there in Winnipeg Blue Bombers gear. It would stick out like a sore thumb.
I just kind of want to do it just to see if there's like, if anyone comes up to me and is like,
you have to be
sir, or I think you better leave. Like, all right, whatever. It would be funny.
It would be funny, but I don't want you to get banned from Commonwealth because you go to a lot of games. I see you went to the game this week. So, you're living in a CFL city for the first time in forever. I don't want you to get banned from the state, but I just think it would be funny. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, a funny tweet at the very least.
So if you do it, please live tweet any sort of ruckus that happens, because
Oh, I will.
I will be glued to my computer screen.
You got it, buddy.
All right, let's move on to our weekly picks. I don't think anyone's going to make any silly proclamations like the Ticats will beat the Calgary Stampeders, will they, Mike? Anyway, that 2 weeks in a row you made some pretty bold predictions. And don't get me wrong, I don't want you to stop doing that. Those take balls. So good for you for at least putting yourself out there. But you know what? Getting them wrong is half the fun sometimes. So let's get to it. Week six? Week seven? Week seven, holy smokes. Week seven kicks off in Toronto on Thursday night with the Juggernaut Stampeders heading to play the Argos. This one was tough for me to pick. What about you? Who do you got in this one, Mike?
Yeah, it is tough for me too, but I'm gonna go with the Stampeders. Why not? They're just a good team, and the Argos are a good team too, but they're not quite at the same level as Stampeders, which is a pretty obvious statement.
Yeah, I'm taking the Stamps too. I think this one's going to be a lot closer than people think. You look at these teams, Stamps obviously come in rolling. Argos lost to the Riders, the last place team in the West, but I don't know. It's in Toronto. The Argos do look pretty good. I'm taking the Stamps, but I would not be shocked if the Argos pulled off the upset here at all. Friday night, we have the first of a doubleheader, which is Winnipeg at Ottawa. Mike, who do you got in this one?
That's another toughie. You know, all these games, like, I can't say enough how impressed I've been with the quality of football games this year for like, you know, 90% of the games, 85% of the games, whatever it is.
100% of the games that don't involve the Ticats, pretty much. Oh, and you know what? I completely forgot. We never even touched on that Winnipeg-Montreal game. That was nuts!
Oh, my God. That was an outstanding football game. I mean, yeah, just watching that, I was just thoroughly entertained throughout the whole game.
A minute, what, 40 left, and the Bombers erase a 12-point deficit? That was just... Watching
yeah,
that,
kick.
Oh, after that, I tweeted out, like, best CFL season ever, best CFL season ever. This is just, it's been awesome. Like, you can't say enough about the quality of play that we've gotten, with the exception of pretty much most Ticat games. Everything else has been pretty darn close. So, like, and that game to me, the ending of that game was one of the greatest I think I've ever seen. I'm very happy for Winnipeg fans, because if there's a fan base out there suffering worse than Ticats fans, it's Bombers fans. That would have been pretty cool to see live.
Oh yeah, I was kind of cursing when the, not that I'm a Bomber fan or anything, but when they did the shotgun handoff. I don't know about that, but credit to Andrew Harris, he kept fighting and got into the end zone. So
yeah, Andrew Harris, your favorite player.
Yeah, right, exactly. He's impressed me this year, I must say.
Okay, but, anyway, who do you got in this one between the Bombers and the Red Blacks?
I'm going to go with the Red Blacks. No, I'm going to go with the Bombers. No. I'm going to go with the Bombers. You know, Matt Nichols, I think I said this before, but I think Matt Nichols throws the most beautiful spiral in the CFL. He just throws a beautiful ball. Ottawa's been struggling. I think they're still a good team, but I'm going to say the Bombers go in there and take the win.
This might be the closest game of the week, because I think these two teams are very evenly matched. I'm going to take the home side. I'm going to take the Red Blacks. I think having the week off, and as much as Red Blacks fans don't want to think that they had a bye week, you didn't play last week. You had a bye. I don't care that you played two the week before. You had a bye. You've been off since Monday, so you had a bye. I think they get a little rested up, get some of those nicked up players back, get a chance to view some more tape on the Bombers. I like Ottawa on this one. Second game of the doubleheader, which, before we get into it, inexplicably starts with probably about a half an hour left in the other game. The Ottawa-Winnipeg game kicks off at 7. The Hamilton-Edmonton game kicks off at 9:30 Eastern time. So for the first time in forever that I can recall, there's a crossover in the start times for these games, which to me is absolutely ridiculous. Why not start the game at Edmonton at 10? Anyway, I digress. Ticats at Eskimos. Mike, are you going crazy? Are you taking the Ticats in this one?
No, I can't justify taking the Ticats to beat a 5-0 team at home. I have to pick the Eskimos, but I'm hoping, like all hopes, that I am wrong.
I got my fingers crossed that the Ticats will win, but I am not crazy enough to take them. I too am taking the Eskimos in this. I think this will be a much more competitive game. I think the Ticats will come out with something to prove that they weren't the pushover that they were in Calgary. I think we're going to see a better football game, but until the Ticats win, I can't justify picking them. So I'm not taking the Eskimos. Last game of the week, Saturday, BC Place Stadium, the Lions host the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Mike, who do you got in this one?
You know what? I'm going to go with the Riders.
Of course. Jeez, you always got to make a crazy pick every week.
I know. But the Lions, they're one of the better teams in the league. You could argue second best, third best. But I liked what the Riders did in Saskatchewan last week against the Argonauts. They showed some moxie. They came back and won that game. Jerron Carter had one hell of a game. That offense was looking pretty good, so I'm going to take the upset and take the Riders.
All right, well, I'm taking the Lions because they're at home. I think they're the better team. I think they just have more talent. This could be Chris Williams' debut, adding him to an offense that's already scoring at a big clip. I got to take the Lions in that one. So I think that we had quite a few different – we had two different this week, so it'll be interesting to see where we stand coming into next week. So – last but certainly not least, let's get to our questions. We got three from Adam, who always sends in the best questions. No offense to anyone else, but his are always very well thought out and very fun. So we got three from him this week. His first one is simple, Mike. Rank the backup quarterbacks from 1 to 9. Where would you like to start? Would you like to start at number 9 and go up to 1, or would you like to start at 1 and go down to 9?
Let's start at 1. I'll start at 1.
Okay.
Do you want to go 1 for 1 type deal, or
you know
do you
what?
Want me to just name?
You know what? Why don't you start at 9, give your whole list, okay, and then I'll start at 9 and give mine, and we'll leave them not knowing who the number 1 pick is until we get there. So start at number 9. You give it your whole list, and I'll give mine, and we can discuss who we had where and why.
All right. Well, number 9, I'm going Fajardo. Number 8, I'm going Dominic Davis. Number 7, I'm going Brandon Bridge. Number 6, I'm going Buckley. Number 5, I'm going Vernon Adams. Number 4, Drew Tate. Number 3, Mazzoli. Number 2, Franklin. I'm not giving out number 1 yet.
Well, no, give out number 1 because obviously it is now.
Well, it's Lule. Because, yeah, Lule.
Oh, well, we don't have much to disagree with here because we're pretty much the same. So you had Fajardo at 9. I had Davis. You had Davis at 8. Okay. I had Fajardo. At 7, we both have Brandon Bridge. At 6, we both have Andrew Buckley. At 5, we both have Vernon Adams. At 4, we both have Drew Tate. At 3, you had Mazzoli. I had Franklin. At 2, I have Mazzoli. You had Franklin. And at number 1, we both had Travis Lule. So not a, like, I so why – the only thing I – the only question I really have here is why Franklin over Mazzoli?
I just believe that Franklin – you know, we've seen more of Mazzoli, a bigger sample size, but I just believe in my heart that Franklin is a better quarterback than Mazzoli and will be in the future. I believe that Franklin will be a starting quarterback in this league, and I don't believe that Mazzoli will be.
That is a very, very fair – observation. I can't really argue with that. If you're interested, the reason I put Mazzoli over Franklin was we've seen Jeremiah Mazzoli start many games in this league. We saw him start and win a playoff game. We saw him nearly get his team to the Grey Cup and play really well and out-duel a future Hall of Famer in Henry Burris. We haven't seen that from James Franklin yet. With James Franklin, it's a lot of what he could be. Whereas Mazzoli, we know what he is, and I think you're right. He's probably never going to be a starter in this league, but he is a darn good backup and a guy that you can bring in as your backup and feel comfortable with. I think you can still do that with Franklin, but Franklin's sample size just isn't as large. And that is ultimately what separated, in my mind, these two quarterbacks. And I guess the rest is just – like I put Davis – the reason I put Davis over Fajardo, if anyone's interested, is I haven't seen Davis play at all, and I've seen Fajardo play a little. So that was pretty much all that sort of changed there. And everything else we had the same, so I don't really think there's any more reason to go into it. So I think we can move on to the next question, which is also from Adam, and he asks, should the CFL change the penalty for losing a challenge, perhaps a 15-yard penalty instead of losing a timeout, or should the league go to the NCAA model where everything is a booth review? So there's kind of two questions here. Should the penalty be changed and maybe it be a 15-yard penalty, or should the CFL become more like the NCAA, where everything is reviewed for the booth and there's no challenges at all. So what do you think?
Everything's reviewed from the booth in the NCAA? I didn't know that.
There's no coaches challenges in college football in the States. It's all if a player's looks like if they rule him stepped out of bounds, they'll look at it and they'll kind of buzz down and be like, hey, we're looking at this play, so it's under review, and that's kind of how it works.
Okay, well, I like the idea of a 15-yard penalty if you lose the challenge, but I also like the idea of just having a coach having one challenge per game, and that's it.
That would be your change to the system?
That would be my change to the system, just one challenge. You only get one, that's it. Stop with these, you know, the challenges of a challenge, and then all this craziness is just ridiculous. I'm very interested to see if they do make a change, what it will be. But that would be my suggestion, just one each.
Okay, so obviously this is a pertinent question because of what happened in the Edmonton-BC game where Edmonton's kicker gets hurt, so they go for it on like 3rd and 14, and it's knocked down, it's incomplete, and then Edmonton challenges, and it's ruled pass interference, which was specious at best. And then later, I think it was on the very next drive, Brian Burnham catches a pass, but Wally Buono thinks he's interfered with. Looks pretty darn similar to what happened in the end zone against the Esks. He challenges, they don't overturn it. So because of that, because there's so much ambiguity and lack of consistency, I don't like the idea of the 15-yard penalty. I do understand the notion of it because then it will stop these. Maybe Jason Moss doesn't challenge that pass interference call if the penalty, instead of it being, if he's wrong, instead of it being losing a timeout, it's a 15-yard penalty. Maybe we don't see these challenges, so I can understand the rationale for that. But I think the problem is just the system itself. And I don't mind that it's just a timeout. They have two timeouts. You have two challenges. I wouldn't be angry if they went to one challenge. At this point with what they're doing, I wouldn't be upset if they just ditched the whole challenge system, period. I hate to bring it up, but I was watching that East final, and there were a lot of plays in there where you're like, that would have been challenged. That would have been challenged. Ooh, that was a questionable call. Like, there was a lot of questionable calls in that game. But 20 years later, no one cares. You know what I mean? So I understand we've kind of opened Pandora's box when it comes to challenges, but it's never probably going away. I wouldn't be upset if it did, to be honest, because I don't think the game is any better for these challenges. And I think if you're going to make a change to this, my change would be stop. You can't challenge penalties. Make it so that it's catches, it's scoring plays, it's turnovers, it's is a guy in bounds or not. The things that you can very clearly see on a replay that doesn't take any human element into it at all. It's like, well, did he catch the pass? Well, he's got two hands on it. He's got a foot down. Yes, he caught the pass. You know what I mean? Like, exactly. The things that are very black and white, that would be how I would change it. I would get rid of illegal contact penalties. I would get rid of the pass interference penalty. I would get rid of that stuff. Make it simply stuff where you go, did he catch it? Did he get across the goal line? Was the fumble out before he hit the ground? Like, stuff like that. That would be my change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would be down for that as well. And I would be down for my idea with the one challenge. Because if you have only one challenge, you're not going to be, you know, challenging in the first quarter, you know, illegal contact, away from the play, all that garbage that we've been seeing. For all the greatness, all the great football we've been seeing this year, the challenge is kind of, it hurts. It hurts the game a bit. So, you know, something has to be done. Something has to be fixed in that regard. And I hope it's coming soon.
Yeah, my only issue with the one challenge, and it's actually my issue with two challenges and three challenges, is that if the refs are missing calls, and I agree, if you have one challenge, you're not going to be challenging these ticky-tacky illegal contact penalties. But if a coach challenges a play and the refs got it wrong, he's being penalized for being right. Like, it's almost like you're giving refs a get-out-of-jail-free card. And I got to say, I think the refereeing this year has been very good across the board. I don't think the reffing's been a problem. I think it's the command center that's been a problem. Mm-hmm. That's, to me, why I would not go to the NCAA model of just allowing booth reviews, because I don't trust them to get it right anyway. And now you're trusting them to not only get it right, but to have enough chutzpah to call down to the ref and say, I think we have a mistake here. That to me, I wouldn't like that. If I had more faith in the command center, I think I'd be more amenable to going to a strict everything's from the booth. But I just don't think – I think I like, as much as I want to see challenges knocked down, I just want to see games adjudicated fairly. And if a coach gets a challenge right, I think he should have the option of challenging again. So maybe it's not so much – I don't know. There's really no perfect way to do this. The more I think about it, because it's like, you're right. I don't want to see these ticky-tacky illegal contact penalties called. Because, yes, they – like, and the thing is every time we see them, like, they are penalties, but they're they're not affecting the play, really. And I know the argument is, well, what if the quarterback was looking – like, I get all that stuff, but – look, the game 20 years ago was perfectly fine when we didn't have all these rules to challenge on. I know we're not going to get rid of them, and that's kind of why I think that that's why I like my idea. I'm not saying your idea is bad, Mike. I actually do like it. I just think that there's, I don't know, just get rid of some, all the things you can challenge, and I think we'd get less challenges.
Yeah, I can see that too. We need the flow. I mean, that's the one thing that's holding it back right now is the silly challenge system we have. And a couple of years ago, I was all for it. I'm like, as long as they get it right, I mean, let's have these challenges. But we've had it for a couple of years, and I've soured on it. And I think most CFL fans have soured on it. So it's time for a change.
I think so, too. Last question. And this one's a tough one, because if we were asked this last week, I think our response would be a lot different than it's going to be this week. But this is very Ticats-centered. Does this year's team remind you of the 2014 team where the talent is better than their record after a horrible start? Am I being too optimistic thinking this team can turn it around when Davis, Kane, and potentially Butler return in a similar fashion to how the 2014 team turned it around when Caleros returned? How different would your answer have been last week if we had this question as opposed to this week, Mike?
A lot different, because there was progression going on. There was week after week we saw this team get better, and then it just hit a wall and just took like 50,000 steps backwards. So I'm not very – I don't think that this is the same kind of team that it was in 2014, obviously. Maybe when they get those players back, they might improve, but they'll probably just get injured and be on the sixth game as soon as they come back, like Kane will. Well, Kane's not on the sixth game, but I'm expecting bad things about him, about his injury, to come out in the near future. So I don't know, man. I'm not very optimistic about this team right now. Like I said earlier, I'm not giving up the season. I still holding out a little bit of hope, but no, to answer the question, I don't think that the talent is near what it was in 2014.
My worry is you name those three players, and I'm sure those aren't the only players you meant, but those are the three Adam named. Do we know if any of them are going to be back? Yeah, we had Kane for a half a game, but is Ken Austin said after the game that the injury did not look good. Does that mean he's going to be out for the rest of the season? Will Butler play this season? Will Davis play this season? Will these guys even come back? No one knows. I think the other difference between this team and the 2014 team is not so much this team specifically, but the makeup of the league. 2014 was Ottawa's first year, and they were basically a guaranteed win. I think the Ticats played them three times in 2014 and beat them all three times. The Red Blacks are not an automatic win anymore. In fact, the Ticats are looking like the team that are the automatic win this year. So as much as I want to remain positive, and if this question would have been asked last week, I would have said absolutely. I saw the question after we recorded last week. So this week's game hadn't happened. This was a holdover question. And I was looking at it going, absolutely, this team will turn it around. I was going to bring up the schedule and how even if they start 0-6, you look at who they play in the next like 10 weeks, and it's like there could be 7 or 8 wins there, and they could turn this around. You walk into a Calgary and you get beat by 59. Even the most optimistic of us can't think that this.
No, there's still some out there, Josh. That
I know there are.
Positivity all the time, no matter what. And it's like, are you blind? Can you see what? are you watching the same team that we are? I mean, what? Oh God, I don't know.
Hey, bless their heart.
I mean, I respect. I mean, I God bless them for being positive people, but it's just wow.
Yeah, it's rough being a Ticats fan right now, and this is definitely the worst we've had to deal with since we started doing this show all those years ago. But, hey, if they turn it around, I'll be the first one to eat crow and be happy that they did. I'm not – like you said, I agree with you. I'm not giving up on anything. I'm not – but this football team right now is a very bad football team. And if they turn it around like 2014, I honestly don't even care if they get to the Grey Cup. But if they turn it around and make the playoffs, I'll be happy. because the start of the season.
That'd be a huge, huge accomplishment.
It would be. And then I could probably look at it. We could go in. We'll do the same thing we always do. We'll go into next season going, okay, well, they played well down the stretch. And all right, let's take them to win the Grey Cup.
Yeah.
But right now, it doesn't look good. But, hey, fortunes can change in a week. We went from pretty high on them last week to really low on them this week. Same thing could happen. We could bounce right back up next week after this game in Edmonton. Who knows? And that, in the end of it, is kind of the beauty of professional sports. One week to the next, anything can happen.
Yeah, one game at a time, Josh. One game at a time.
All right. Well, this has been one podcast at a time, Mike, because we are done for the week once again. Everyone out there, remember, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, or listen to it or download it at 3 Down Nation. Want to throw a question our way? You can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, let them know where they can find you on Twitter, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am JoshSmith_82. And you can always post your questions, like Adam does, in the comment section on 3 Down Nation. Or if you want, you can fire us off an email. We are at podski@gmail.com. So that, Mike, was episode 82, the Darren Flutie episode of Podski Wee Wee, who I believe is,
my boy.
Is he your favorite player in Ticats history?
He's up there. He's up there. A big Hitchcock fan. Even watching that 99 final, he was one hell of a player. But yeah, Flutie, Hitchcock, Montford, you know, they're all kind
of
my favorites.
That late 90s, early 2000s teams. Yes. I get you. Those were most of my favorite players coming through. Maybe one day, maybe in the offseason, we'll watch those games and maybe we'll reminisce about some of our favorite players from our youth. But anyway, episode 82 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat them raw.
Eat them raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.